Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Yep, I bet he did. I see that he has in his hand one of the same type items. We're talking about Dan, who is making his way in. It is the regular crew here on a Monday. Bill and Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and Drew at the controls. B-Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm good. We had a nice trip to Alex City today. We're back. And
yeah,
ready to
man.
Talk.
Beautiful weather and beautiful scenery there at Willow Point. I took a few shots just to
gorgeous.
Go. Man, it really is. It was a picturesque. It looked like paintings or something, you know. I mean, it was gorgeous today as we had a chance to spend a little time with Bruce Pearl talking about the upcoming season and the roster, which is not complete yet, not finished.
Not quite.
Yep, looking for one more addition to the roster, and not necessarily, according to Bruce Pearl, not necessarily a point guard.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. He said a one or a two, two or a three.
Yeah, he said a one, two, a two, one, a two, three, or a three, two. So in other words, a combo guard who's primarily a point or two guard, or a combination two or three guard. And he said then, I asked him about the Tahad Pettiford thing, and he said, no, that could change. If we sign a guy who is more an off-ball, then Tahad could be more of a point guard. But he doesn't really want the pressure. And again,
but if he signed a three, then the question
it would
be,
need to be. But it would need to be a three who also is interchangeable at the three and the two.
Yeah, or that would be a suggestion that Chad Baker Mazzara can play some minutes at the two, and this new guy would play some at the three. I don't know.
It didn't sound like he's going to sign a three. It would be
that's why I was surprised to hear that number suggested.
He said a 3-2. It needs to be. It's going to be somebody who has been a guard.
It would be a surprise for them not to sign a guard, although they are talking like the. Like Jaheim Hudson can play some guard as well, right? Isn't that the talk of Turtle?
No.
Wasn't there talk that Turtle can play some big guard?
No.
He said he
can work on his 3-point shooting, but no, he didn't.
Maybe I'm thinking of Jaheim or the freshman.
Jakai can play some. He called him
three.
A guard, basically. He called him one of his guards.
That's
because
right now, he's very thin. Jakai Howard is
right, and so Jakai. I've always thought that the addition would be a guard as well. Hearing Bruce, I mean, it would be a surprise if it was somebody who was not going to play any minutes at guard, right? Like if they were to add somebody
now, they need
now,
some minutes at guard, and if they don't sign anybody else at guard at point that has played some point, then your point guards will be J.P. Pegues, Denver Jones for some minutes, and Tahad Pettiford for some minutes.
I think they might have 40 minutes of point guard on the team right now if they were to add someone who can play minutes at the two and the three.
Yeah.
Like if they were to add someone who they felt good about.
Well, I think they'd really like a primary one and two. They'd like a combo 1-2 or 2-1 guard.
Right, and I say two and the three. I mean, if you're interchanging that player with Chad at the two and the three, then it's the same. I mean, it's more or less the same thing.
But he loves the fact that Chad is long and is going to be out there on the big wings. So
right, but if I don't
see you signing a 6'2", 6'3 guy and playing him any at the three.
No, but if you're playing, and I've had people, I think we've even had a caller ask about, like, can Chad Baker Mazzara play any of the minutes that Bruce is talking, like, of the 80 minutes that Auburn wants out of its two guards? The one and the two, should any of those minutes go to Chad, or should they be 80 minutes completely separate from, which is an interesting question.
Yeah,
because I think Chad could do it, but I also think they like what they're getting from Chad at the three, well, and they could be penciling Chad in for 25 or 30 minutes at the three, depending on who else is in the backcourt.
Bruce talked about limiting turnovers and having and handling the ball, and that's more of a factor. Obviously, it's the most important at the one. It's next most important at the two. More important than it is at the three. Chad is a pretty good ball handler. I don't know that they're comfortable enough with him handling it as much at the two.
I'd also be interested to know how much shooting you're going to have on the floor if Chad's playing the two. Like, who else is out there, and are you going to have enough three-point shooting? Because I think if you have two dangerous guards, JP and Denver or whoever else you were, like, if you have two shooting guards and Chad, You've got some 3-point shooting on the floor, on top of Janai.
Janai, yeah.
But I think if you were to play Chad at the two,
I think Chaney's not a bad shooter either.
It improved
down the stretch. He was pretty good.
Yeah, I get what he said, but to me, what they really really need is a 2-1, a guy who plays shooting guard but can also play point guard in the backup role. That would be the perfect addition to this team, in my opinion.
So I walked in late, and I'm we probably should have had this conversation off the air. Should we start with the Brian Battee stuff? Like, that's sort of where, I mean, I know was, you guys were there for Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, we were just talking about just welcome in on a Monday, and we had a
and some
nice no
and some of that's on me too, right, for jumping right into basketball as well with questions. But I do wonder if the you know, the horrible news about Brian Battee from over the weekend is sort of the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to just toss that into
no. You're right. I mean, and Hugh Freeze tweeting out today that a setback overnight, and that Brian Battee is still on a ventilator after the tragic incident early Saturday morning around 3:30 down in Sarasota, where Brian Battee's brother Tommy was killed, and Brian was shot in the head.
Yeah, local media, it's been picked up since by more national outlets, but the local reporting from the Fox affiliate in Sarasota, county deputies investigating a deadly shooting early Saturday morning. It happened 3:30 a.m. Tommy Battee IV was pronounced dead at the scene. Four additional victims were taken to a local hospital to be treated. As of press time Saturday morning, their conditions were unknown, but we've since learned that one of those four victims taken to the hospital was Auburn running back Brian Battee. And he is
he's still in critical condition.
And he's still in critical condition days later. So it's, I mean, I was sort of, I mean, once, and Brian, I you know, want to welcome you in on this as well, because, like, I don't know, like, that this is, I first heard about it from student athletes, you know, issuing thoughts and prayers on social media. That was my first indication that, one, this didn't seem, because you get hoaxes and stuff, right, where you want to be really careful about, you know, rumors or anything about something like this. But when players were starting to know, especially players who would know Brian Battee personally, it started to seem like not a hoax. And now, you know, days later, we know that it's real, and it's just tragic for a family. Not only having to deal with waiting to learn more about Brian's condition, but also mourning the loss of his brother Tommy.
It's terrible. It makes me think about some other tragedies we've had here in Auburn with football players and guns, and it just makes you just feel sick about the whole thing.
You guys are parents. I mean, so yeah. you've been parents of college students, and I mean, this is, I mean, just a nightmare. So yeah, I mean, it's something.
And we don't really know a lot more details.
No,
I mean, all we know is that there was a shooting. And the
I've heard it reported that it was a hookah bar, like,
yes,
outside.
That was confirmed. Okay. I read the police report.
Yeah, I don't know too much. I'd read that, you know, it was a parking lot, but I didn't know exactly what the business was. But yeah, a hookah bar in Sarasota, and not really much more of that, you know, as far as
we don't know.
I believe there's a line,
the instigation or anything.
I believe there's a line that it seems isolated and not targeted, which means it could have very well started with an argument or something that turns physical and leads to a young man losing his life and four other people in the hospital, including Brian Battee. So yeah, a very sad piece of news that doesn't seem like there's Didn't seem as though Hugh Freeze had great news to bring earlier today after.
No,
after
and the concern is not football right now. Not at all. With Brian Battea. I mean, it's you hope that he can get through this and be able to, just live a meaningful life.
Yeah. I mean he's still a college student, a young man. So all the best, but horrible news.
3-3, yes. We're just underway here on the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Drew at the controls. You can join us by calling the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We'd like to hear from you. Anything that you want to talk about sports-wise, Auburn done on the diamonds, both baseball and softball. We knew baseball was coming to a close, and it wasn't great news when Auburn dropped their opener in the NCAA regional down in Tallahassee. They fought back and made it to the championship round, but just ran out of gas and they fall. Their season winds up down in Tallahassee, as an awful lot of Auburn diamond teams have.
Yep.
And then Auburn baseball takes the first two from Alabama and had a lead in game three. But as we have seen many, many times this year, Brian, just the bullpen unable to hang on, and Auburn wins the series but drops the final game, finishing 27-26.
Yeah, and I thought they lost Saturday's game Friday in the seventh, I think it was, when they had the error and they just could not get out of the inning when they were about to 10-run Alabama.
Yep, they were a pitch away. Yep. As a matter of fact, there were two strikes and get a ground ball to the right side. It's about to be 10-run, yep. And it turns out, Alabama brings the go-ahead run to the plate.
Right, almost came back and won that game. And that really cleaned out Auburn's bullpen a lot of way and really kept them from being able to have a little bit more punch on Saturday in that finale. But still, the way the season went, to finish the season with two straight series wins, you saw some progress. The team can have a little bit of momentum, feel a little bit better about themselves going into the offseason now.
Yeah, and now the focus is I would guess, right now on golf. The women's golf team is hanging in there.
They made match play, right? They made the top eight.
Did they? They were seventh.
That was yesterday, I think.
Okay.
Or was it going today again? I have not looked at it today. I'm sorry, but we've been busy. We drove.
Yeah, we were up and back to Alex City. I heard they were seventh. I was thinking that was to set up match play, but maybe they're in. The thing is, they made the top 15, and then the top eight advanced. And I believe that's where they are.
You're right. I think you're right.
And
starts at 5 today, 5 Central, 5 to 9 Central. So that'll be on the Golf Channel, too, if you want to watch it.
And then next week, the men's golf team, which is number one in the nation, will be right back there at the same course in Carlsbad.
It has been a tough couple of years, I guess you could say, for Auburn Athletics. I think it would be great if one of these teams could finish off with the national championship,
kidding.
Just to have a little bit of excitement.
Head into the summer as you get ready for next year.
I think some teams are coming back. I think football's coming back to be much more competitive.
Basketball's fine. I mean, basketball has got so much coming back. Bruce Pearl said again at the end, Yale.
Yeah, still.
I mean, it's on his mind. It's going to be on his mind. He's not going to get over it.
No, I would say the outlook, and I want to give Butch Thompson the benefit of the doubt, and I want to see him, rebuild this thing into something that can compete for national championships and go to Omaha too. I would say as we enter, and it's not fair because so much work is about to be done with the baseball roster too. The portal's about to open up in college baseball. At the moment, basketball and football feel much closer to the top of the conference than baseball does. But that's,
man, I don't know. That's interesting to say. Just because baseball was really down this year,
exactly.
But it's been a while since football's been near the top of the conference, hasn't been long since Auburn's been in the College World Series.
I think the last time Auburn went 8-22 with Butch, the next year they went the College World Series. I
believe you're right.
That's what I mean. I mean, I don't want to write off the possibility that 6 weeks from now, that's different because they've made the right changes to the roster and the right guys are coming back. Because that's the other issue. I was talking to you about that this weekend, Bill. Like, there are some. Even in the pitching staff, right? There are some guys who made strides that you would love to think, oh, that could be a foundation. Chase, is right the primary example of you'd love to see that as a foundational piece of next year's team.
Yeah, but that ain't happening. Not after the way he threw against Alabama and the way he's thrown the last few weeks, Brian. No, I mean, don't you agree? I mean, I don't think there's any way you're going to see Chase Alsop back.
I mean, he's always been a guy that was going to be drafted above maybe where you think he is just because of his stuff.
But then he has performed well the last few times.
Yes, I think he will get drafted, and I think he will move on. I think Auburn is going to have to rebuild almost the entire pitching staff.
I think they've got to find, I would think, if possible, two weekend
at least,
starters.
Yeah, I think Cam Tilley will be back, a very talented freshman, as long as he wants to be back. Griffin Graves, who I felt like is a really talented freshman too, had struggled all season and then comes in the ninth Saturday after a long rain delay. I think he struck out the side, if I'm not mistaken. Was it? Or at least two of the three. I go back and look. But it was good to see that, and maybe he can be a really good contributor for Auburn. I'm sure some other pieces will come back, but it's definitely a rebuilding job on that side of the ball for Auburn.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Any direction you want to go, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we're just underway here on the Monday Drive.
What's it mean to be a 467
and online at ESPNAU.com? To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and love for you to join in. Again, we were up in Alex City earlier today. Bruce Pearl spending a little time with the media before his charity golf tournament there at Willow Point, and talking about, yes, we learned that Jaheim Hudson is known as Turtle.
Yes.
And he explained that that's because he doesn't have much of a neck and he's really actually 6'9". what that would mean is everything is built like on him like he's 6'9", except he doesn't have a long neck. He said, although the 6'9 guys with a lot of hair and a long neck, they're really only 6'7".
It's not a speed thing. That's what that's
no, no.
Okay.
It's no, not, he said it's because his head is right there on his shoulders.
I like it.
You know, you always keep your head on your shoulders. Well, apparently Turtle does. But, I mean, no, he talked about that the fact that, and it's a couple of the things you read about him is he's...
He likes to go out on logs and sun himself.
Yeah.
Is why they call him.
No, but, I mean, he's a guy that has been an academic all-conference player at a couple of different schools. So he's a good student. He's a good teammate. Coaches have liked him. So, I mean, he's also someone who is willing to come in without a guarantee of 20 minutes. And that's got to be one of the toughest things. And, you know, Bruce didn't say it exactly that way, but, I mean, he's a guy that could give you more. And he had a couple of really good ball games this past year at SMU, and he had some really good ball games at Georgia State where he was a starter in his second year. But he's a guy who is willing to come off the bench and play whatever time that he can get.
Right, and the key word he said was not be entitled.
Right.
And, that's important when you've got, 11, 12, 13, whatever it is, scholarship players in basketball. You know, everybody's got to understand their role. And if you have guys that don't understand their role and are angry, upset about their playing time or their minutes, that can bring a team down. So he's looking for players who can help out, but also are going to be good teammates too.
Yeah, and he talked about something that's very important, and this he said evaluation, and value is the key is the key word in evaluation now, because everyone has a value, and a lot of them feel like they have more value than you may think.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I thought that the story of Jahni Broom, ruling out the transfer portal, and just going with and saying, I'm gonna stick with Auburn or go to the NBA. And that's a really cool story. I'm gonna take Bruce's word for it on there, because if Jahni had gone into the portal, I mean the market for a Jahni Broom
value would have been high.
The market for a Jahni Broom type out there, I've heard crazy numbers. For players that aren't of Jahni Broom's stature. I also thought it was interesting Bruce said, you know, Jani's season didn't really move the needle as far as his NBA stock.
Yeah, said he would have still been a second-round pick is what he thought.
Which I guess is just a reminder of how different the games are at the college NBA level, that someone like Jani Broom can improve like he seemed to from when he first got to Auburn to now, and it's still not really – you know, I guess there are some physical limitations for his position. You know, maybe he doesn't have the explosive athleticism of some of the top flight guys at that. I don't know, but he's because I would want Jani Broom on my team every season. You know, I'd always take a player like that.
Oh, he's a great college player.
But yeah, he's somebody who's is able to he's a huge. I mean he is no disrespect to like Chad and Denver and JP, and there are a lot of reasons why people have high expectations for this Auburn season, but I think Jani Broom coming back is the primary one. Like if Auburn were replacing Jani Broom with an unknown, even from the portal, right at the post, if Jani had moved on and the rest of the team was back, I think people would be much more muted in their optimism of this team being able to be a championship kind of team, you know, have a SEC or even national championship kind of season with Jani Broom back. Like that's the kind of ceiling that this team is looking at. It's one of the, I mean, and I want to get to something that Brian wrote about earlier today, speaking of big recruiting wins and the possibility of big recruiting wins out there. But keeping Jani Broom back for another season looks like it's one of the big recruiting wins of the Bruce Pearl era, and we'll see what happens with this season. But it's enormous. And Jani said he's being treated fairly by the NIL collective, and so you wonder, he's entitled to his privacy, so you know we don't need to know exactly what that means. But I think he's probably doing just fine considering the market for players like Jani Broom out there.
Yeah, and for people that might be concerned or complain that Auburn's not doing more to retain the players Auburn retained: Denver Jones, Chad Baker Mazzara, Jani, Dillon, and Chaney. I mean, all those guys back. And Bruce raved about what Dillon could have gotten if he jumped in the portal.
You don't think any one of those guys would? I mean, the market for any one of those players would have been pronounced if they'd been able to jump to the, you know, if they'd gone into the portal and said, you know, I'm open for business.
Yeah, they all could. They very well. I mean, any of them could have done it.
And especially with the kind of programs like this. This is, I keep thinking this is like an unusual season in college, or an unusual off season in college basketball, because so many big time programs and so many big time coaches jumped. But I don't know. Maybe next year.
Yeah, like maybe it's the norm. Yeah, from maybe now that's what's on. Gonna,
but I mean, to think like Arkansas and Kentucky and USC and SMU and Stanford, like you have programs that made coaching changes and have empty rosters, like just entirely, you know, bringing in Vanderbilt. Right, there are 8-9 new players on Vanderbilt. I mean, it's just, and that's the way, the sport sport seems to go now, I guess. But in that market, any of the contributors from last year's Auburn team, I understand. You know, KD had an up and down year, and KD also wanted a lot of playing time. He wasn't really looking to go into a back, you know, a reserve role somewhere else. But any of the guys you just listed, the returnees from last year's team, like there would have been. I mean, Trey Donaldson's gonna be the starting point guard at Michigan,
right?
Like, I mean, you don't think there would have been for Chad or Denver or Dillon or, I mean, Jani. Look, if the rumors are true about what guys are getting, then Jani could have gotten $2 million. Like, if the rumors are true about what guys are getting, you know, if inferior players to Jani Broom are in that price range, then an All-American would have commanded, you know, some serious box office from anyone who wanted his patronage. He's a movie guy, so you know he'd have been something of he'd have been something of a blockbuster.
Oh, there, yes. He would have been a summer blockbuster.
Yes, no, he would have been a summer blockbuster. Maybe the blockbuster as a nickname for Jani. We'll see. I'll see if I can get that. See if I can get
good
that
luck
word.
With that.
Oh, you know, I'm working on it. All right, Brian. But
all right.
But the I think that the being able to retain these guys is, I mean, it could be as important as any sort of recruiting win you have out there on the trail. And speaking of recruiting wins out there on the trail, I thought Brian wrote some really interesting stuff in the musings today about
sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, and that's, you know what, that's a story we haven't really talked about very much on the show. Bill, is Auburn's recruitment of a high profile quarterback in the in the high school ranks, Juju.
Oh yeah,
we haven't talked all that much about Auburn going after Juju. Brian wrote some interesting stuff in the musings.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to see the musings before we went to Alex City, so I just asked him about the musical musing.
Well, I mean, basically, I touched on in Auburn's. I think it's history.
I thought the musical musing was some wild stuff.
I loved writing about Johnny Carson and Bette Midler. How often do you get to write about those two iconic people in one little?
Yeah, I read some of that stuff and I said I did not know that. Yeah.
I love that when I can do that for people. But so in the 23 years of the Rivals rankings, Auburn has signed 2 5-star quarterbacks and only had 1 top 5 class.
Jason and Bo, 2 top 5 quarterbacks. Is that not right?
Cam.
Oh, Cam and Bo. Cam okay. Bo.
And, of course, it coincided in 2010. That was a top 5 class, and that was Cam Newton. And, of course, it turned out pretty good. And Auburn has a chance to do that with Julian Lewis and – potentially how they can do this season with this class. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to result in a national championship in 2025, but that would be a good step forward, another big step forward in this staff building Auburn back to be
Auburn definitely seems to be trending more and more for Juju.
They really are. It's no guarantees. Committed to USC right now. He's from Carrollton, Georgia. He'll be in for an official visit mid-June. And then, you know, I think he'll probably have a final decision sometime early July, I would guess. And certainly a guy like him, he's not just the number one quarterback in the country and a 5-star. He's also the number one overall prospect in the country. So this is a big, big-time player. Mm-hmm. And this would be a huge win if Auburn could pull this off.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We're just a quarter of the way into the show. Got plenty of time for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
Young players in the program, Kay Ballou would be one of the top ones. Cam Tilley, a pitcher.
If you can get Ike Irish back.
Yep, that'd be good. Eric Guevara stepped in, came back so quickly from his ACL injury and was able to basically play half the season.
Chris Stanfield's just a sophomore, but he's draft eligible. So.
And he played much better at the end of the season.
He did.
Especially offensively. And then
Derek Fabian's another young guy that, I mean, you saw some, you know, at times. He was streaky.
Yeah,
this year.
Went through a really bad slump about midseason, but finished really strong.
He had a lot of doubles, it seemed like.
He's got some pop in his bat. Yeah. He absolutely does. And he's very athletic and can run and do some things defensively that are really good, hit for power and, you know, do a lot of things if he can just be a little bit more consistent going into next year. And then Kale Strickland, the freshman catcher, I thought was terrific when he came in and got some starts and got some playing time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, obviously, you'd love to add another bat or two, but the immediate need is got to be on the mound.
Yeah, they've got to address that. They signed a top 5 class in November that'll be here this summer. Not all of them, of course. I think 12 of those guys were pitchers, if I'm not mistaken. Right. I think the top 3 in the class were pitchers. So they knew they had to address this coming into this season anyway, but they're going to have to address it anymore and bring some veterans. You can't throw a bunch of freshmen in there and expect them to start in the SEC, right? They've got to have some guys. You got to let them come at their own pace, and you got to have some guys above them that they can look up to and follow and learn from. So it'll be important that they find some veteran pitchers to bring in.
Once again, appreciate the call, Anthony. Love for you to join in as well, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one as we continue with the Monday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commission.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one here on this gorgeous Monday afternoon. Man, I hope everybody came through. Saturday was crazy. I mean, it rained and then it cleared up and the ball game, we were at the ball game for about half because we had our granddaughter And then it was time for her to, you know, go home and eat and get a bath and go to bed. So we left, and the weather was still gorgeous. And about the time we left, Alabama tied the game up. It was our fault. I mean, because things were fine. While Kennedy was at the ball game, everything was fine. But we left. But I had no idea that the weather had really gotten bad. We're up in North Auburn, right there near, you know, over up in your neighborhood, Brian.
Yes.
Where Kennedy and her mom and dad live. And she got her she had her food. We gave her a bath, get her ready for bed, and then I decided to go out to the car, and it was raining again. I thought the rain had gone because it really looked nice, the middle of the game on Saturday, and then then some bad stuff came, and the game, I was unable to be able to watch the game, and we'd turn it, you know, and listening, we just kept hearing highlights of other games, things like that. It seemed like forever once the game got held up there by the by the Lightning.
I think it was 2 hours and something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was a while. Yes.
It was long, and it was so painful because it's like the agony. You're just extending the agony because
right. You knew it was going
to
happen
because they'd already scored in the top of the ninth and made it 12-5.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, we got home, and I had no idea. I thought it had just rained a little bit, and then there had been some lightning in the area. We got up yesterday morning, and I looked out, and there was, a piece of the big tree that's in my front yard was just lying there. I mean, it had about a 30-foot-long piece of the tree. It just was ripped out, and everything that had been on the front porch was blown up against the side of the porch. I mean, there must have been some serious bursts of wind. So hopefully everybody came through that all right. But that was crazy. We got a lot of rain too. A lot of rain over the last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be sunny all this week.
So. I think so. Looks like it's going to be pretty nice. I think maybe around the weekend or something. There's a chance. Of rain again, but good weather here as the first full week of class is going. Were you busy today
on campus?
Yeah,
a little bit. I know they had some. You know, we had the Monday classes going on, but
I got a call from Doug and the guys, but I was on the way.
I was on the way
to Alex City.
They wanted to reschedule me. They had something going on at 1:00, and I had something at noon, so I was unable to make my usual appearance. We have the Ken's replacement in the house today. So
yeah, he got introduced yesterday and said goodbye to it at church.
Okay, good. So that was okay. So you do know the guy.
I've seen him now. I didn't get a chance to meet him, and I was explaining to one of the professors that we videoed that was there when it was announced that he was leaving his position at the church. It's like I told him that he was coming over there to work with Engineering Online. So that's cool. Good time for transition.
Yeah.
Try to sort of ease into things in the summer. Sort of like with football players and athletes. It's a great time to sort of get acclimated to college and to the routines, which are going to step up quite a bit here in a couple of months.
We're about 2 months from Media Days, almost exactly. Right? I think Media Days will have just ended.
We'll be wrapping up, yeah.
Two months from now, and then... from that one, then we're just counting down the days
till
the opener.
Yeah, then you're just a few weeks away. All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join in. Again, the number to get you through, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Monday edition of the Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive just underway. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from Auburn Sports BillCameron.com and Drew at the controls here on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well out there listening. And we had some crazy weather over the weekend. Looks like it's going to be beautiful all week. So, you know, hopefully you don't have to spend all week indoors. This is a gorgeous time right now. It's still not too humid. Feel like summer's getting closer and closer. It's warming up a little bit.
It was getting steamy second half of the day today walking around campus.
It was a little warm in the sun. Yep. I felt for Bruce Pearl today as we're up at Alex City. Jeff Shearer put him in the sun. Well, actually put his back to the sun. And look, we're radio, so it didn't really matter that much. And I didn't video it. I didn't need the video of it. We got audio, and we've got 15 minutes of audio with Bruce that sometime we can run. But I sort of felt for Bruce. But we're standing there, and it's pretty warm on a beautiful day like today. But, hope everybody doing well. Welcome into hour number two of The Drive. Second hour of the show brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can be a part of the show by calling The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. And as always, big shout-out to our buddies at Southeastern Industrial Contractors for their continued sponsorship of The Drive. Everybody out there at Southeastern Industrial Contractors doing a great job.
Well, Dan, no triple crown for Mystic Dan.
No, the bubble burst. You know, he's going to have to settle for just being a Kentucky Derby champion. And my understanding is he
will be a pretty high priced stud.
That's what I mean. That's my understanding is, you know, the retirement's not so bad once you win a couple of titles. So Mystic Dan has that to look forward to. But he does not join. What was the last one? Like Smarty Jones or American Pharoah, or I forget. The last winner of the Don Dunn would know. I'm sure he's yelling at his radio right now, Coach. You know, he went to the Kentucky Derby this year, Brian. We talked.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Coach. Yeah, Don Dunn is a.
He grew up in Louisville, so
he's a regular. He goes quite often. Big horse racing.
I was interested in listening to the story as we were on the way to the concert Friday week ago when he was talking about the fact that that his buddy that had the house doesn't anymore. I mean, he's just got property there, but Don could still go over there and hang out across the street.
I mean, the Kentucky Derby, and my understanding is Augusta has some business like this, where it is. I mean, there are houses where you rent for the month before the event, and that pays for the rest of the rest of the year. You know what I mean? People renting to stay near Augusta or near the Kentucky Derby on Derby week. You know, those sorts of things can pay for.
I'm sure
that can pay for the property the rest of the season. And I mean, I'm sure parking is. I'm sure that venue looked pretty packed. So I bet parking is it's a priority out there. But no, it was great to hear those stories. I'm bummed out about Mystic Dan, but he'll be fine. You know, he'll shake it off, and I don't even think he really understood what was going on. Being a horse.
No, I would imagine that's probably true.
Sure, I'm sure he looks at the trophy, just understands that it's not food. It's still too bad because you know would have been cool to see history. And I'll tell you what,
what was crazy though is as I was reading it, I mean, I heard this the other day. It's 6 years since you've had a repeat Kentucky Derby Preakness winner. That's the second longest drought in the history of the Derby and Preakness.
Right, you get some.
You've been teased an awful lot of times at a possible triple crown.
You get some horses that don't run in the Derby that present a challenge in the Preakness, and then you get horses that skip the Preakness and then are more well rested than a triple crown champion in the Belmont. So yeah, it's a tough one. You know, on speaking of obscure sports from Saturday. An instant classic heavyweight title fight. Usyk and Fury, just a war. Usyk is far. I mean, he's like 50 or 60 pounds smaller. This guy was fighting in Ukraine for much of the last 2 years. Like he's Ukrainian and he's actually been like fighting in the war. And he's taking a break from that.
Literally? Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Not boxing.
No. He's
fighting.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Yes. Usyk was a heavyweight champion.
He said something about a fight and then fighting, and it's like, oh, you mean fighting?
Yes. He is doing both kinds of fighting. He is both fighting in. Yeah, you're both fighting in
prize fighting, and yes,
he's both fighting in combat for the Ukrainian army and also boxing for the. And he's the first undisputed heavyweight champion in the four belt era. First one we've had in. I think it was Evander Holyfield. Lennox Lewis was the last fight. It's been a long time since there's been an undisputed heavyweight champion in boxing, and they had a classic. Fury looked like he was in control. Usyk rocks him with a couple of punches. You know, it's a great thing about boxing. One guy looks like he's in control.
Yep. One punch.
One solid punch to the nose, and the breathing is all thrown off. It looked like he broke Fury's nose with a punch. The breathing was off. The punch output was affected. Fury didn't want to get punched in the face anymore, which I feel like is probably understandable.
Yeah, you got a broken nose, and I don't think I'd want anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and the fight came very close to being stopped. There was a sequence in the ninth where Usyk just absolutely was given in the business. Fury is able to fight it off, and he's saved by the bell. It came down. I mean, it could have gone. Could have been a draw. Could have been Fury. Could have been Usyk. It was a complete dice roll when it went to the scorecards, and one judge by one round gives it to Usyk in a split decision. So we have a new heavyweight champion. First loss of Fury's career. Fury said in the ring afterward, "There's a rematch clause, and if they're both healthy, they'll do a rematch in October." And it was a great, you don't get instant classic undisputed heavyweight title fights all that often anymore. We got one on Saturday with Fury and Usyk. So hats off to those guys. Check out a replay if you can, and be on the lookout for the rematch in October, because they had an instant classic.
We'll talk whatever you would like. I'd love for you to join in though as we continue here on the. On the Monday edition of The Drive, as we mentioned earlier, Bruce Pearl with the media earlier today up in Alex City, and confirming that he and he and the Tigers looking for one more piece to add to the roster. I mean, he seems very comfortable with what he has, but would really like another guard.
Yeah, and I agree with him. I think that's the missing piece for this Auburn team. It doesn't have to be a superstar, but a guy that you can count on to come in there. Now, Bruce said he would take a 1-2 or a 2-3 or 3-2, so he's more open. But to me, I think you need a guy that can play shooting guard and give you 10 to 15 minutes of point guard if needed.
Yeah, and one of the things he was asked about, what is he really looking for? I mean, he's looking for a guy who can handle the ball and not turn it over and just be able to continue – the pace and the type of the type of game that Auburn's playing.
Is eligibility a concern? Do you think they'd take in whether
I think
it's
they'd
one
rather year, have somebody with more than 1 year.
But if it's 1 year, if the guy they're looking for is a 1 year guy, they'd take him ultimately.
I think at this point it's just getting the best player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I was gonna say he mentioned that he felt like the play they got from the bigs last year was tops in the SEC or among the best in the SEC. He felt like the guard play was middle of the pack, and he feels like they need to get better defensively, they need to get a little bit better shooting, and they need to be able to finish at the rim a little bit better on two-point shots. And, I agree with
that. Yeah, I think that was something that the fact Auburn guards didn't – I think they didn't penetrate and force the issue there at the rim the way some other teams did.
Right. Draw fouls, make it really difficult, more difficult for teams to defend them, and – opens up their shooting more so too. And I think one thing that JP Pegues brings is a lot of that stuff Bruce was talking about. And I just think he's going to be a better distributor of the ball too. It's not just driving and finishing, it's driving and when you're blocked off, making that really good assist to one of those bigs. And you've got a guy in Dylan Cardwell, if you drive in and he rolls to the basket and you do that little lob dunk, he's going to do that. That's a play you can execute really efficiently with the guy like Dylan and Janai too. And Janai, of course, is more versatile and you can do a lot of different things, especially if you can drive inside and get that team sort of scrambling to defend.
I would imagine that backup point guard is sort of the primary job of anyone they would add to the team between now and the start of the season, just because right now, I mean, if Auburn, you know, if something were to happen to J.P. Pegues, Auburn is looking at either sliding Denver over or, well, or elevating the draft.
They don't have anybody who is really a point guard.
There's there's one true point guard on the team right now, and it's J.P. Pegues, who is and there's no reason to think he's. I mean, he's stayed healthy his college basketball career, but it's a lot riding on one guy at a really important position. And so I would think that even if it's somebody who could play the two or open up. Maybe even open up other roster possibilities. The real priority right now would be, beyond JP, your next point guard up is probably Pettiford.
I think so.
Right, and that's somebody that I think Bruce, for a couple of reasons, doesn't want to put too much of the point guard responsibilities on Todd Pettiford very early in his career.
That's right.
And with a senior team, that's probably the right move too, because a team of 23 and 24 year olds that's trying to win a national championship right now, that's a lot for a point guard that was in high school last year, even the number one,
and it was sort of a situation for Auburn a year ago, and you didn't really talk about Aiden that much, but I think what happened with Aiden last year goes a lot into Bruce's thoughts about what he wants to do with Tahad.
Well, Bruce talked about this specifically today, and he said it's already a big transition to go from high school to college.
Right.
Just to play and defend better and all those things. And to do that and to convert from being a shooting guard or off guard to being a point guard is a really, really big step up.
Even if you are the point, you're the guy that runs everything. When you are the scorer, you're the show in high school. And then to have to be running and you've got other players that need the ball. You've got to be more of a facilitator and not turn the ball over, try to play defense. That is an awful lot to expect an 18-year-old to do.
Yeah, I agree. So I think the best position for Tahad is to come in and do his thing, and then over time develop more ball handling skills, learn the offense.
As he gets more comfortable with the college game.
Right. So if they can find that guard who can be that backup point guard, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, so I was wondering, I have no idea. Maybe there's a junior college guy out there. Maybe they would like someone who has shown that they're, I think, a tough competitor who's a good ball handler. And then, hey, if they can score, fine. But I think scoring probably is down the line when it comes into what is important in that spot.
Yeah, it'd be great if they could find somebody who could shoot threes pretty well. But I think
those guys want more than 10 or 15 minutes a game.
Right. But if you can just find a reliable guy on the ball who can handle it, distribute, and run the offense, that would be great.
And he's,
I do wonder. I mean, you raised the point about like maybe that was an issue last year. I do wonder, like, if Aiden Holloway had been on a team that was more similar to his own age, right? If it had been Aiden on a team of freshmen and sophomores, if it would have been an easier situation to manage, or if it had been Aiden on a team
with a very experienced point guard where he'd have been more the off guard,
or a team, I mean, any number of ways the situation.
I think if Auburn had J.P. Pegues last year and Aiden Holloway's the backup point guard and Aiden could have played shooting guard, he would have had a much better season.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I think that's what Bruce is thinking, and he's thinking that could be the case with Tahad. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. Bruce himself was like, "Yeah, it is a little unusual to be here toward the end of May and still looking to fill out the roster." So
that's been a situation, especially with the NBA draft workouts the last couple of years. That's been a situation he's found himself in. Auburn has added players in May and June.
Last year, I mean, we're talking about it up there today. Last year at this time, everybody's wondering, is Jani coming back?
Yeah. I mean, Chad Baker-Mazar, I don't think, was on anybody's radar at this time last year. If he had, he just appeared on folks' radar.
Yeah, I think it was just right at this time.
No, I think we looked last week. They had signed everybody by now.
Yeah, I think, but Chad had signed, like,
late. Yeah.
Really, recently.
And KD was a very late addition to the recruiting class, too, a couple of years ago. KD Johnson, because they added him after the Desi Sills, Trey Alexander thing. Sort of evaporated.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Katie wasn't. I mean, Katie, I think, was last week of May, maybe even in June when Katie commits to Auburn.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, that's what Auburn's looking for. I mean, he talked a good bit about Turtle Hudson, Jaheim Hudson, letting everybody know, because he started just saying something about Turtle. Oh, that's his nickname. Mm-hmm. He pointed out and said it's because his head is Turtle. Really down low on his shoulders, doesn't have much of a neck. You know, it's not like, it's sort of like, remember Walt Williams, the old baseball player? He was known as No Neck. And that's sort of, I guess, the Turtle's a cooler nickname than No Neck.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, sports-wise, here on the Monday Drive.
It's time to stop dealing with Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. Let's head to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Hank is up. Hey, Hank.
Hey y'all. I was just wondering if there was anything, what was new on the Brian Batiste situation.
Yeah, we have not mentioned it this hour. Really haven't. We haven't seen anything new. I guess the last thing we saw really was Hugh Freeze's tweet earlier today, Brian.
He did. It was about close to noon, I think.
Around midday. Mm-hmm.
He said, Auburn family, please continue to pray for Brian Batiste. There was a setback last night, and he's still on a ventilator. So, yeah.
That's so tough. I guess to echo Coach Freeze's thoughts, you know, those out there listening, if you believe in prayer, you know, Adam to your
absolutely
last night, because, man, I, you know, just to be that age and dealing, you know, with that and all, it's just really bad. So anyway, I just wanted to call in and get the latest on it. You know, great player. I remember last year, you know, JG and some of y'all talking about what promise he showed and but, you know, just beyond that, being a young kid, it's just a lot to have to handle.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And the loss of his brother in the shooting too. Yeah. We appreciate the phone call, Hank. I mean, so for those who don't know the details in question, there was a shooting in Sarasota early Saturday morning. Brian Batiste was one of the victims. His brother Tommy Batiste, who was 24 years old, was killed in the shooting. Brian was one of four other people who were taken to the hospital with injuries. Auburn's latest, the official from Auburn University, aware of the situation, continuing to gather information, unquote. And as you guys said, Hugh Freeze offering some best wishes on social media earlier today. A lot of Brian's teammates and other student-athletes at Auburn, a lot of his former teammates at South Florida, have also posted on social media urging Brian to get through this.
Yes.
Yeah, and I want to add that there has been a GoFundMe set up for his family. And if you go to my Twitter account or other Twitter accounts or just search for the Petit family, GoFundMe, you can find that.
Up to about $67,000 on that GoFundMe started over the weekend.
Appreciate the call, Hank. And, we had not mentioned that. Sorry about that. We hadn't mentioned that this hour. We have seen no updates. Really still have not seen any details on the incident itself down in Sarasota.
Just know
the location and the time.
No arrests as of the Tampa Bay Times earlier this morning as well. So, yeah, just not very many not very many details out there.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We talked some talked a little season-ending wrap-up baseball as Auburn finished taking two out of three from Alabama. Alabama still, they've got a chance. I think Auburn could have made it really, really a long shot.
13. Yeah,
they got 13.
Right, and they've got a really good RPI.
They do. They've got a top five RPI.
The one on NCAA I think was top 20. I get it falling to 16. I can pull it up here.
It's still a pretty high RPI. Yeah. If they win a game in the SEC tournament, I think they're in. And they may be in without a win in the SEC tournament. Auburn could have made it really difficult because 12 wins, I think they said only 18% of teams with 12 conference wins had ever made the NCAA tournament.
I think it goes up to maybe 38%.
38%.
Their RPI is 18 in the NCAA RPI. Now, sometimes you never know what the committee is going to put emphasis on sometimes.
Yeah, whose poll or numbers or whatever they're going to look at. But they'll probably get in. Auburn winning their last two series, the one prior weekend at Missouri, and then taking two out of three from Alabama this past weekend. And once again, getting pretty decent starting pitching. That's something.
Yeah.
The last two series, Auburn had not had a starter pick up a win in SEC play until the last two weekends. And then it happened four times.
It did. Tanner Bauman pitched really well. He didn't get the win, I think, at Missouri, but he pitched well.
Right.
And then pitched really well and got the win against Alabama. I think Chase Alsop got two straight wins. Pitched really well. And then Herbert Holtz pitched well.
Had to hang on for that one on Friday.
Yeah. It was a much better finish for the staff and for the team overall, and just good for them not to, you know, to have some success going down the stretch there.
And it's going to be really interesting just to see who all's back for next year. We heard that teams came after Ike Irish a year ago, and I can guarantee you they're going to do the same again this year.
Yeah, oh yes, absolutely. That's just the way it is now. And in fact, I don't think the current rules can keep teams from contacting players almost directly.
Your NIL folks can contact them.
Yeah.
Crazy because since as long as NIL is not a part of the athletics department, those people can contact players and say, hey, we've got this much money available here.
Now, that could be changing in the next few weeks as they settle the house and some other if they can settle the house and some other lawsuits with NCAA. But what they're saying that settlement's going to conclude involving NIL doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it's going to be, because I'm not sure everybody involved in NIL agrees with that.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see about that.
But it would be such a huge step if they can work out some kind of settlement.
Right. And I think the settlement will involve some type of revenue sharing between players and they're going to try to bring everything in-house. So you don't have outside NIL collective entities doing that. Whether or not they can pull that off, we'll have to wait and see.
If they do that, will it make it less? Or let's see. I'm not going to say that it wouldn't happen, but would it be frowned upon then to be contacting players who are at other schools more? Because now the NCAA can't really do anything about it.
Right. Well, I mean, if they are able to move everything in-house, then I'm sure they can put up rules to, you know, outlaw that kind of stuff.
Oh, I think it
doesn't mean it won't go on like it's always going on through intermediaries.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Have it sort of be like the old days.
Yeah, if NIL agencies are in-house, one would think, or NIL collectives or whatever, you know, if the NIL operations are taken in-house, one would think that there would be more enforcement of tampering than you could have right now, because I don't know what penalty. I mean, you could force dissociation, I guess you could force, but that's not really being taken seriously, you know, by virtually anyone. So
I'm still skeptical about the NCAA being able to pull this off and being able to enforce certain things and do the things they're talking about, because as soon as they try to do that, they get sued and they lose and they lose and they lose. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with this settlement. But I think I would be a little skeptical about everything I hear about it.
Well, I mean, what's going to be extremely important is how well written the settlement is.
Sure.
So that what is agreed upon is agreed upon, and it's there. It's there in black and white, and it's like, well, if you don't like it, too bad. I mean, if it's part of the settlement.
Well, but they're not necessarily agreeing with the people who are going to be signing, NILs or signing with schools coming up, or high school players right now. So I'm just not sure they're through the whole process yet. We'll see. This agreement is, there's one lawsuit with the players that played 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, you've got current and past. Right. You don't have future.
Exactly.
Although if you settle House versus NCAA with the current athletes, the way you settle it is by putting together an infrastructure that would then set up college football moving forward. Because you have the two settlements in question.
Yeah, that's what you would. Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah. So that's why it needs to be written very well, specifying and clarifying some issues.
And we're coming up on a deadline. I believe the settlement is in the hands of NCAA figures, conferences, and like they have to approve the settlement soon, like to, in order to take it to, like, I believe Sportico was saying that the NCAA and conferences must vote on settlement terms by May 23rd.
So yeah, that's, we're, so wow, that's Thursday.
So that's this week. So that's
Thursday.
Yeah, those are the votes in order to present that settlement to House versus NCAA. But that's the and that's the one that if they don't get a settlement and they go to trial,
that's the triplicate.
And they lose a lot of, which they will lose. Yeah, a lot of folks think that losing that lawsuit would be the end of the NCAA because. They would have to triple the damages.
Well, they could, but they normally would.
Yes, yeah, and well, I believe they are. I believe if you lose an antitrust thing, the damages get. I believe that's like the multiplier kicks in once you lose.
I don't know that it always does, but it usually does.
Okay, but it's either way. It's. I mean, this is an important time for them, and they need mm-hmm. to unpack everything that would entail.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still a half an hour left. Plenty of time for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through here on The Drive.
Part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Monday. Just heard an Uncle Keith spot there on The Drive. And speaking of that, that's your sponsor for your Monday Musings, Brian.
They are, and they do a terrific job. I know you probably heard us talk about it, but if you haven't gone out there, if you see it at the local Kroger's or Publix or Piggly Wiggly's or Renfro's throughout the state, just give it a try one time, and I guarantee you, you're going to love it. And you want to get more of it. It's just really delicious. You know, obviously you can use it for salsa, but my wife this weekend, she had like a sorority alumni thing, and she made these little mini taco treats. And part of that was putting some of that Keith's Red Sauce in there, and she said it was a big hit. And of course, she saved some for me, and I enjoyed them too. But
you're salsa with your eggs, guy? I know some folks love a little ketchup or a little salsa with the eggs.
I am not, but I know a lot of people do.
That's some good salsa.
Yep, it is delicious.
Southern style salsa there from Uncle Keith's.
Tastes
good stuff.
So fresh.
Yeah. Really, really does. All right. Speaking of Monday Musings, let everybody know just what you had there today.
I did. Of course, I talked about and we talked about this earlier about Auburn. You know. Looking to sign maybe the number one quarterback and the number one overall player in the country in Julian Lewis.
And then you looked up a little while ago, and Auburn has done that one time.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about it, but they have signed the number one player overall at one time in the history of the Rivals rankings. That was Byron Cowart in 2015.
Yeah, that one didn't exactly work.
Did not work out. Carl Lawson is the next highest ranked signing. He was number four in 2013, and that one definitely worked out. He was a great mm-hmm. player. And then next, I believe, is Cam Coleman, who is number seven. And I got a feeling that young man's going to work out really well for Auburn, too.
Early returns are yes. Yes. He's got a chance.
The thing about Cam Coleman, and we were talking about Jabari Smith last week and how you could just sort of tell, like, it beyond the measurables, like, the ease of movement and stuff, where, like, there was a difference between Jabari Smith and other players who were the same height and weight. As Jabari Smith, like he could do stuff that those, and I feel like with Cam Coleman, people focus on he's 6'3" and he's 200 whatever pounds. He's able to like his ability to move to go get the ball. He can do some of the some of the stuff that you have to do as a great receiver, no matter how big you are.
Yep,
now, the stuff that you need to do to be an effective receiver at 5'10", 5'11". Cam Coleman's doing some of that, and we're seeing it. So I think it's a really really promising skill set. Didn't occur to us until conversations last week that Pat Nix coached both Calvin Johnson and Cam Coleman at different points in his in his career, and so he's seen what a special receiver looks like.
Oh yes,
and absolutely. Maybe just sent one to Auburn.
I also mentioned in my musings, Matty Pinta had a terrific performance down in Tallahassee.
She really did.
21 strikeouts against. Was it UCF in 12 innings? That's a single game record for Auburn. Unfortunately, Auburn could not, beat Florida State on Sunday, but they played terrific in those two games Saturday to at least get to that championship round. And then I got a chance to talk about the penultimate Tonight Show with Johnny Carson 32 years ago, had Bette Midler on as his final guest. And
I always remember that as his final show, but it's not. There was one more. Yeah, he did one more with like the regulars from the show, right? Yep. With Ed and Doc.
Basically, one where he brought in to the studio offense all the friends and family of people who had worked the show and stuff, and was more of a reminiscing type show. But it was great to go back. I spent hours watching old Johnny Carson skits and highlights and stuff, and just that was a great show.
When everyone remembers Wind Beneath My Wings, which is the the last Bette Midler performance there on that show. But they also do, is it One More Rainy Day?
One for my baby and one more for the road.
Well, they do that one too. But I believe they do like a couple of songs.
They did. Here's That Rainy Day as a duet together.
Yeah. Okay.
Just sitting there, it just came up. You know, and that's unplanned.
That's a show tune that was Johnny's favorite song. Yep. And when he passes away, Doc did that on Letterman on the clarinet or whatever it was. The alto sax, maybe whatever it was. Doc
was a trumpet.
The trumpet. Yeah. Doc's on the trumpet. Oh, that's and they have they have that. The yeah. they have some people from the old Johnny band come on the Letterman show and do Here's That Rainy Day.
Another thing gorgeous. I did not put in the musings, but he would fax of course, right? David Letterman jokes all the time for David to use in his opening. And David would use them a lot. And then I guess on the day or soon after Johnny passed away, David opening with all Johnny Carson jokes that he had sent him.
Made two public appearances. I guess if you count these as public appearances, after retiring, he did. He was on an episode of The Simpsons because a couple of his writers from The Tonight Show became Simpsons writers, and so he did an episode for them, and then also. Like an uncredited walk-on. There was a week Letterman did a show in Los Angeles.
And he was in a guest or something. Well, he did a bit
where Letterman like invited Johnny Carson on, and I think it was Bud That's Melman. It.
Yeah.
He came out and to the Tonight Show theme and waved to everybody, and it wasn't Johnny. And then he did something, and then the actual Johnny comes out and gets the guy and waves to everybody and stuff. But it was like it's obviously
Larry
shocking to see
Bud Melman.
Yeah, to see that. But no, a really really cool moment that you highlighted there in the music.
Yeah, it's great. Just go back and watch the old videos. It's awesome.
Yeah. So and you can check that out as well as all the info that and the entertainment that you'll find there at AuburnSports.com.
I appreciate that. And you can check us out at AuburnSports.com. You can follow me on. Twitter /X and Threads at BMATAU.
We were talking about it. I mean, it's that time where, and we said this the other day and had no idea there was going to be. I mean, it's the time when, except for the occasional recruiting, I mean, there'll be more recruiting news, a lot of recruiting news coming up. But this is sort of the slow time right now. You might see something from the transfer portal. Really, the only news, sadly, is usually not good news, and that's what we got over the weekend, the news about Brian Battee. I mean, it's because there's not an awful lot going on. You've got golf. We were just looking, and the Auburn women tied for seventh. The top eight teams advanced to match play, and they've got a 3-stroke lead right now, and they're through. I believe they're through 11. They're on holes 12 through 14 right now. So. Chance for them to move on, but I mean it's not a busy time as far as sports is going on.
No, it's not. But starting June, Auburn will start holding its football camps. The official visits in this crucial period for recruiting in the 25 class started last weekend, and you'll see that really really heat up the first couple weekends in June. We spoke about Julian Lewis, the number one quarterback, number one overall player in the country. He will be in, I think it's June 16th, I think is the date.
Talk a little bit about him. I mean, I know he's highly ranked. I mean, what would fans expect to see from a Juju Lewis?
He's got really good size, but he's really just such a natural thrower of the football. Right, he's got a good strong arm, but very, very accurate. Tends to move really well in the pocket when he needs to, and can, of course, run when he needs to, and affect a defense that way too. But I just think he's a natural quarterback who just has really, really just good touch, just natural good touch, and that's so important for quarterbacks, I feel like. And he's also a guy that's competed at a high level for a long time, and I think he's going to be able to step into a college program and not feel intimidated or overwhelmed with making that transition.
Because, I mean, you know, the Auburn quarterback job appears that it would be pretty open next year. I mean, depending on how things go this year and who gets – You know, any significant playing time other than Peyton Thorne.
Yeah, if it goes the way we think it's going to go, Auburn's plan for this year was to bring back Peyton and build a better team around him, better receivers, better running game, better offensive line, a better offensive system. If that works the way they want it to, then it'll be a big competition really this fall for the number two spot, right? We don't know exactly who that's going to be.
Right.
And then going into next
spring. Would you have guessed coming out of the spring that Hank had an advantage over Holden and Walker to be the two? Like if we had to, I mean, just based on, I would think based on how much we saw of the three of them in the spring game, that would be a safer assumption, but I don't know.
Yeah, I that's what I would guess. That's what I would put it if somebody told me to rank them 1 through 4. But we don't know how much progress Hank can make from, you know, being a true freshman, his first college practice, and Walker.
Yep.
You know, back in the spring to going through summer and then tour days and where he can be going to next spring when the competition really heats up. And Julian Lewis, I'm almost positive, would be an early graduate and be able to enroll.
Yeah, just about everybody is these days now.
Yeah,
It's almost as though for football players, you know, their senior year ends in December.
Yep, exactly. That's just how it is now, most of them. I mean, if you look at last class, I think Auburn signed, what's it, 21? And 17 were early enrollees? That's just the way you got to do it now.
And it's the way it is everywhere. I mean, everybody's early enrollees make up the majority of some. And, I mean, Alabama had like 24 early enrollees this year. So, if you want to, if you're planning on hoping to play as a true freshman, it's very, very beneficial to be able to go through spring ball.
Oh, yes, very much so. And if Auburn can have success on the field this fall and make a step forward, right, in the offense and the way they play and the wins and the excitement of the program, that's gonna carry over into recruiting too.
I mean, obviously, quarterback's going to be the one that everybody points at. But what are the areas you're going to be watching the most closely and that you feel like it's critical that Auburn really take a step forward or that Auburn needs to improve from what we saw this spring?
In recruiting, the good thing about the 25 classes, there's a lot of good defensive linemen right here in Alabama and Georgia and surrounding areas. Auburn, I think, already has 3 or 4 defensive line commitments. I think it's just 2.
Yeah, they had – I think they had 3 or 4, and then they had a couple – 1 or 2 that committed.
I think Malik Autry from Opelika is just going to be a star player at Auburn.
A lot of teams continue, continue coming after Malik.
Yep, and is it Caleb Falk? Yeah, the younger brother of Keldrick Falk. I think he's going to be a terrific – whether he grows into a defensive end like his brother or whether he's an edge guy or a buck linebacker and is just a pass rusher, I think he's going to be another terrific player too with the same great attitude that his brother has. And but needs-wise, they need 2 running backs. So that's a pretty big need in that class. They need to sign a quarterback, of course, and Julian Lewis would be a great pickup there. They did a great job – rebuilding that wide receiver room, but they do have a lot of guys that are probably leaving after this year, at least a few of them, that just have 1 year of eligibility left. So they're still going to have to sign a couple good receivers, but if they get that great quarterback, it's a lot easier to get those great receivers with him. They've done a great job on the offensive line, so they just need to keep reloading, keep signing good players there. I think the defensive line remains a priority there. I think the last year's class and the class they bring in this year will really set the tone, and next year they won't have to address it as much as they did in the past 2 off seasons in the transfer portal. I think last year they signed 3 or 4 transfer D linemen. This year they had to sign 4 interior transfer defense linemen and 1 edge guy. I think they could cut back on that going into next year. And then the linebacker position, then you've got 1, 2, 3, several seniors.
At least three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a position that's going to have to be big in this 25 class, too. And then the DBs, I think, you know, just signed the normal group. But I don't think there's necessarily like a critical, you got to have it, than running back, just because they're going to be a little short there after next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I do think, though, and we've talked about this before, that the job that Hugh and his staff did in the portal this year is, is very impressive. I mean, they took a different approach. They were a little more proactive, wanting to get the first shot at some of these guys, and it has really helped.
Well, I think they've signed several guys that are going to start or be, you know, top backup guys. And I really think how they finished with the portal with Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State, the receiver, mm-hmm. I think he'll be a starter. Keyron Crawford, the butt linebacker edge guy, is going to be 1A or 1B along with Jalen McLeod. I think the four defensive linemen interior guys, they'll probably be the top four in the playing rotation, or at least four of the top five.
Now they may be the top four. Yeah,
may very well be. Mousie is going to probably be either the starting middle linebacker or the backup or split playing time there with the kid they got from Ole Miss a year ago.
Austin Keys.
Yeah, Austin Keys, yep. And then Robert Lewis, the wide receiver from Georgia State, he's probably going to be your starting slot guy now. Now that you brought in a experienced guy on the outside, that allows him to play a more natural position there. And I think Rico Walker, the guy they got, is going to be a really good tight end for them. Won't play as much this year, by next year.
And obviously Percy Lewis.
Right.
I mean, what a job I thought in the portal this year.
Yep, met that perfect need there with a left tackle with SEC starting experience and allowing the guys to shift inside there and really fortify the offensive line, I feel like.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
I'm Jessica Samuel. Cobb.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final few minutes here on this Monday edition of the Drive. And I was just looking there in the break, and the Auburn women's golf team in pretty good shape as they're now through 12 holes. They are in seventh place, just two shots out of fifth, but they are four shots ahead of the ninth place team. All you want to do is get in the top eight, and then it's match play.
Yep.
So so the things are looking pretty well. Auburn having a pretty good day. They're five over on the day. Let's see. On the day, USC, who's in fourth, is two under. LSU is second, and they're three under. But the next best scores are Texas A&M at plus four and Auburn plus five. So, I mean, it's been a tough day there out in Carlsbad, where the men will compete next week.
Yes.
And right now, you'd have to feel like they're the favorite. They won six tournaments this year.
Yeah, including the SEC championship a couple weeks ago.
And they've only finished behind teams four times all year.
Incredible.
And I mean,
got some freshmen playing great on that team.
Absolutely. Two great freshmen on this team. So a chance coming up next week. Let's see. I know we don't talk. It's still early, but tough loss for the Braves today.
Man,
they had a five-nothing lead. They are, and the Padres trying to sweep.
What is going on?
The Braves. The Padres were just they were under 500 coming into Atlanta. They're 10-3 in their last 13 at Truist.
What's the biggest concern? Is it Acuña? You know, because you get him going, you'll probably
be fine,
right?
Well, you get him going, but Matt Olson hadn't really gotten going.
Although Olson showed some life. I mean, Olson's homer
starting to hit.
Olson's homer this weekend was like, I made the hardest hit ball he's had as a Brave or something like that.
So he's
coming out of it a little bit.
Justin Ferguson was at the Braves' loss again yesterday. I said, things aren't going so well when you're there. He said, as a matter of fact, Jordan Hill texted him and said it's their fault. But no, the Braves' big bats. I mean, Marcell Ozuna is pounding the ball. But Olson, Acuña, Austin Riley hadn't been seen in more than a week. If the Braves had put him on the injured list a week ago, they could have at least, had somebody else in there. Maybe they could have found somebody. I mean, Zach Short's been trying to fill in. But no, the the big bats.
Is the Riley injury serious?
They say he's going to be back. They say he doesn't need to go on the injured list, and he'll be back in the next couple of days. And they're more concerned about later this season or the postseason. But anytime it's a side injury, an oblique or something like that for a big power guy, I'd be concerned.
I still don't think they're in. I mean, the postseason's still well within reach.
Oh yeah,
for the Braves. You know, it's just a matter of, you know,
long way to go.
They're still looking for a pitcher too. Sent Bryce Elder to the minors today. Brian, before we're out of time, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys do at AuburnSports.com and follow you.
I appreciate it. We'll have plenty of coverage of everything happening this week: transfer portal, recruiting, golf, all of it. AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter/X and Threads at BMATAU.
All right, Brian, have a great week.
Appreciate it.
We will be back tomorrow. Andy Burcham should be joining us. And then Jake Crane in hour number two. Hope you'll join us as well. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.